Tropical Gardener presents Shauna and Dorothy Doby, the editor and publisher of Canada's local gardener magazine, Are Here For You.
Well, hello, I'm Shauna Doby and I'm the editor of Canada's Local Gardener. Today I'm here with my mother Dorothy and Lisa Steele, who is the, I guess, author of the website Fresh Eggs Daily.
Correct, yes, hi.
And we're going to talk about, well, one thing is chickens. You may realize if you read the magazine, or you may not, that I have a lot of chicken envy. And I'm pretty excited that we get to talk to somebody all about chickens in the garden right now. Now, you have a book from before called Chickens in the Garden, Lisa?
Gardening with Chickens.
Yep. Gardening with Chickens. And mm-hmm. You've just released another one that's a cookbook about, I guess it's eggs and chicken. And So, okay. Now, in Canada, we have a bit of trouble with chickens. Well, in urban areas, and I'm urban and my mother is urban, and in neither Winnipeg nor Toronto are you allowed to keep chickens. You can in parts of Toronto as part of a pilot program, but in general, you're out of luck. Do you have the same problems? You're in Maine. You're near Bangor?
Yes, not too far from you, actually. I think we're probably the same planting zone, pretty mm-hmm. much the same climate, right in the city. Chickens are not allowed. They've tried to bring it up. The city council keeps voting it down, which is really a shame because there are properties that have a nice backyard. You know, they're not all apartment mm-hmm. buildings, but out in the rural areas, and I'm sure in Canada as well, in the rural areas, they don't care how many chickens you have or what you do.
Mm-hmm. That is a shame. We have a few different municipalities across the country that will allow it, but neither of ours. And the people who are in favor of urban chickens give all the arguments for it, and it just seems to fall on deaf ears when it comes to the cities. But okay, now you tell us, how many chickens do you have?
We have 18 chickens, 10 ducks, and 2 geese.
That's a lot of birds. How much land do you have for them?
A lot. You know, for that, so our coop is more like a garden shed. You know, mm-hmm. so you walk in, it's about 8 by 10, there's a little storage area. And then the attached pen is about 18 by 40 feet. So, you know, a big space. Well, we have a lot of predators. We are right in the woods, mm-hmm. you know, so we want them to be able to be outside and have space and not worry about the coyotes and fox and all that kind of stuff. But for a small flock, you know, for 4 or 5 chickens, you don't need anything much bigger than a little doghouse size mm-hmm. coop. And then, you know, a pen that they could walk around in, you know, maybe 10 square feet, something like that. I don't know what that is metrically. I know you guys do metrics, but
3 square meters, maybe
something like that. Yeah. So it's not a ton of space. Like if you have enough room for a large dog in your backyard, you probably have enough room for a couple of chickens.
Mm-hmm. And you're a 5th generation chicken farmer, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Is it all in the United States?
Actually they did too. On my mom's side is mostly the chickens, but my mm-hmm. grandmother and grandfather both came over from Finland as kids and, you know, met and got married, whatever. They just both happened to be from Finland. But so my mom is actually a first generation American, but my great grandmother raised chickens here, you know, once she came over, and then mm-hmm. In Finland, my great-great-grandmother had chickens and geese and goats. I mean, I'm sure back then everybody did, you know, because you had to yeah. raise animals to eat, right? I think the interesting part, though, is that a lot of people, say my age, their parents didn't raise chickens, you know, because it was kind of like right. when, you know, mothers were going back to work and all yeah. that kind of stuff. So I think that's the generation that got skipped, because a lot of people are getting back into it, but they might not have had chickens as a kid, you know, or their mm-hmm. grandparents didn't have chickens. But prior to that, I'm sure pretty much everybody raised something because they needed to eat.
I guess you must have had chickens growing up, right, Mom? At different times when you, yeah.
Well, at various times, but not, I didn't have them. I just remember having to go collect eggs one time. That was one of my questions for you. Where do your chickens roost if they've got a really tiny house?
Oh, where would just they? On a little bar. Yeah. You know, like you put a little roosting bar and they hop up onto it.
Mm-hmm. Where do they lay their eggs?
in a little box in the house.
Yeah, you have little boxes for them. Okay, so little chicken boxes. I noticed you have a chicken portrait behind you. Now, is that a great grandparent chicken or is that a current chicken?
No, that actually, that was one of our first chickens, I think. And way back when, somebody on Facebook saw a photo or something and asked if she could paint my chicken. So she did.
Did it have a name?
Yeah, that was Grace. That was one of our Buff Orpingtons, Grace. Yeah.
So
she's a little judgy, though. The real Grace was really sweet, but this one looks a little judgy.
So I was just going to say that this is our second time around. We did 10 minutes of the show a week and I forgot to record it. So we're going to ask you some of the same questions we asked you before.
That's fine. That was just a trial run. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a trial run. Exactly. But now we know all this stuff about you, right, Shauna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot better.
So she forgets, but I've got something.
The gander, okay, you go ahead.
You've got geese. You've got geese and ducks too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the gander.
Yeah, and before we started recording, we were talking about mating season. Spring can be kind of rough. The males of pretty much any species of livestock, that testosterone kicks in. And we did try to have a pair of geese, a female goose and a gander. And we thought he would be great to protect the chickens and the ducks against, you know, coyotes, because geese are big. And he was great until spring came. Mm-hmm. He would chase my husband onto the porch and not let him out of the house. He would take my arm and bite and twist it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we like hand raised him from a day old, but you know, they turn. And so he went to live on a nearby farm and he has a nice pond to swim in. We sent his girlfriend with him too, because they were a pair and we just started over with girl. Yeah. Cause we didn't want him to go by himself. So we sent the two of them, started over with
people. Think, right. Because here in Manitoba, we live, and I've heard about geese being that aggressive that they could actually kill a man with those huge wings.
Mm-hmm. Swans, too. I mean, you think swans are so beautiful, but if you go near a nest, they've actually killed kayakers or whatever. Their wingspan is huge. I've read that, like, if they hit you right, they could break your nose, like, you know, even by accident, just flapping their wings. So hopefully the female geese will be good protection, too.
We have in Stratford, Ontario, where there's a Shakespearean theater festival. It's been going for years. They also have swans on the river. It's a beautiful setting. You know, big old weeping willows and swans floating down. And I just think it's hilarious to watch people go up and they think the swans want to be their friends. Well, they don't.
No, especially if they have a nest of eggs on the bank. I mean, you better watch out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think swans are particularly nice, honestly. I mean,
no, they are not.
I don't think they're too friendly.
So you do have one rooster.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Now he's a bantam.
Yeah, Sherman was an accident. He was supposed to be a girl, and so he's a bantam. So he's about a third the size of a regular chicken. So, you know, when our chicks were growing up, we sort of kind of had the idea that he was not going to be a girl. And then we kind of forgot about him because he's so small. He wasn't super aggressive. You know, I've hatched other roosters and there comes a point when that switch flips and like they also try to kill you and come, you know, flying at you with their talons out, you know, and he never got aggressive. So he's still here. We just kind of forget we have him. He's like the size of a grapefruit and he crows a little bit, whatever. He's super cute though.
Does he go after the chickens in the spring?
He does, but you know, he's so small that he doesn't really do too much damage. A standard size rooster will really rip up their backs, you know, hanging on while they're mating, but he's so small. He like tries to hop on and they just kind of shake him off. So he's like more of an annoyance than anything to them.
Oh, that is so, I love that his name is Sherman too. We should talk about gardening and chickens. Now you keep gardens, Lisa?
Mm-hmm. I try.
Yeah.
The chickens are extremely destructive. But yeah, I do. I mean, I like to, you know, plant vegetables and herbs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now I don't know, where I got this idea, but I thought that chickens wouldn't really harm your garden after it was established. And apparently that's not true.
No, it's, well, first of all, chickens can be extremely beneficial in the garden. They produce a lot of manure, you know, chicken manure is great for the garden. They'll eat bugs and worms, although earthworms are good, but they'll eat, you know, slugs and grubs and things like that. But yeah, they pretty much eat everything. So in the spring, I definitely try to keep them out of the garden when I'm planting seeds, when I have seedlings. In the summer, once, you know, your plants are bigger, mm-hmm. they're not quite as destructive, but they will eat your peas, your cucumbers, your tomatoes, you know, take little bites out of them. They love to scratch in the dirt, so they'll scratch mm-hmm. roots up. So I keep them out of the garden during the entire growing season. Mm-hmm. But then in the fall, if you let them in, they'll kind of eat whatever's left over. They'll scratch up the dirt. They'll look for bugs that are going to overwinter, bug larvae, grubs, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you keep them out of the garden?
I have a fenced in, you know, the vegetable mm-hmm. garden is fenced in. And then I use a lot of like cages, like you can wrap chicken wire around a tomato cage, something mm-hmm. like that. And I plop it over my plants. And it's not only the garden, like your landscaping, your flower beds, your window boxes, your planters, like they'll get in all of it and they'll just destroy it all.
Right. I hadn't considered that before. Okay. But it is possible to keep them out.
Mm-hmm. Or you can keep them in their pen, you know, like in the summer anyway, or in the spring anyway, because you've got a lot of predators with babies, you know, trying to keep out like, you know, snakes and mice and stuff out of the bottom. And then it's covered with the same welded wire. Part of it is a solid roof, you know, so they can get in and out of the rain and the snow and everything. But yeah, pretty much it's, you know, you don't want wild birds to get in. You obviously don't want the chickens to get out. You don't want weasels to get in.
What's the problem with snakes?
Well, they'll eat eggs. Up here, we don't have any, you know, venomous snakes or anything, mm-hmm. but like we lived in Virginia when we first started with chickens, and there are copperheads, which obviously would kill, you know, an animal. And there were the black snakes, which are constrictors. So they could get themselves wrapped around, especially the smaller like chicks or ducklings or whatever. I know I'm not painting like a great picture, am I?
So why would I want to keep chickens?
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay, well, we're going to take a little break. And we'll be back in just a minute.
It's hard to believe spring is actually here. Are you ready to garden? Is your garden ready for you? Learn more when you subscribe to Canada's Local Gardener magazine. Come and grow with us.
Back. Now during the break, Dorothy, you were saying you wanted to talk a little bit more about gardens than just chickens. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I know you're a little bit of a chicken head, but we are a garden show. So mm-hmm. I want to ask Lisa, do you garden with the ornamentals or flower or vegetables or both?
Mostly vegetables, edible flowers. I love native perennials. We've been living here in Maine for 7 years. We lived mm-hmm. in Virginia before that. So it was kind of a change. I mean, I went from like zone 7 or 8, I think, to 5, you know, so there mm-hmm. was a little bit of a learning curve there. But, you know, I've learned that here in Maine, and for you as well, we have really long summer days. So once stuff gets started, it grows really fast. We just have to wait to make sure that it doesn't get, you know, frosted. Mm-hmm. So we plant a lot later than I was used to. But I mean, I grow peas and beans. I grow a lot of leafy greens, you know, kale and spinach and all kinds of lettuces. The ducks especially love those. I grow beets, radishes. I put garlic in every fall. I'm really mm-hmm. good at the root vegetables because mm-hmm. the chickens really can't get to those. Tomatoes, you know, the normal
right.
stuff. I've tried cantaloupe and watermelon, which we are right near the Johnny Seeds test garden.
Oh, wow.
Here. Yeah. So I try to order from them because I figure if they can grow it in their test garden, I can probably grow it, you know, because mm-hmm. we're like half an hour away. So I've had some good luck with some of their short season, smaller watermelons, cantaloupe, things like that. I've grown sweet potatoes in grow bags, regular potatoes. It's amazing to me. Pretty much anything that I could grow in Virginia, we can grow here. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of timing it and making sure you pick the right variety.
How long is your growing season? Do you know when your last frost date and your first frost date are roughly?
We usually like plant around Mother's Day, but that's even kind of early. Mm-hmm. Like Memorial Day is, you know, a safer bet. I think we have like 100 frost-free days, maybe 87, uh-huh. something like that. I try to pick like under 100 days to maturity. on any of the seeds that I'm starting. And of course, I do, you know, start things from seedlings or start them inside, you know, to get a jump start. I grow a lot of herbs. Herbs are great. They grow really fast.
Oh, yeah. Now, Memorial Day is roughly the same as Victoria Day, isn't it?
That's like May. Like May 24th? Last week of May, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And when is there your first frost in the fall?
I usually lose my basil like end of September. You know, sometimes we'll have an early, but definitely by beginning October, like everything is done.
Oh, so you actually have a shorter growing period than we do in Toronto, maybe.
I wonder if because we're closer to the coast or something. I don't know.
That could be. That could be. Because it's usually well into October before we get our first frost.
Well, the basil is always the first, you know, basil just gives up. Like
a touch of frost and it'll be dead.
40 degrees, the basil is done. And I guess some of the other things, the more hardy things will last a little longer.
Shauna, stop bragging. I mean, I live in Winnipeg and it's in the middle of the, you know, and the bay is north of us and the wind comes whistling down the plain and it gets a little chilly in October.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I can't do anything about that. and you are into native plants as well.
Yeah, I like the echinacea and bee balm, catmint, lavender, like all those kind of things. Perennials are just great. You know, mallow, we have some really pretty pink mallow. A lot of it we inherited, you know, when we moved in, it was like a rock garden that had a lot of this stuff in it. Oh, and then I'll fill in with you know, seeds, either wildflower seeds, or I'm not a big fan of planting annuals just because it's so much work and so expensive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the roses, you know, all that kind of stuff. We have some beautiful lilac bushes, which were here that I've separated and kind of moved and planted elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. What do you feed the chickens?
They eat like a chicken feed that we get at the feed store and in the winter, and then some grains, you know, like corn and wheat and things like that, and oats in the winter. And then in the summer, you know, they eat a far less because they're walking around eating grass and weeds. They love dandelion greens. They will pick, you know, stuff out of the garden.
Do they have to have gravel or something like that? Do I remember from my childhood that they needed to have a certain amount of gravel?
They do because, they don't have teeth. So they eat food and then they store it like in a gizzard. And in order to grind up their food, they need small rocks or pebbles or things. So you can buy commercial grit. We have a dirt driveway. So when I let them out, they just run for the driveway and they just eat little rocks.
And they will not. They will not overeat grit. Is that correct?
Right. Somehow they know because as the grit grinds down the food, it also grinds down the grit until it gets to small enough that they pass it. Mm-hmm. And somehow they know that they need to fill up, you know, their gizzard again. Same with the calcium supplement. I put out either a crushed oyster shell or eggshells, and they will only eat as much as they need, you know, to make strong shells on their eggs. Sherman doesn't eat any. If you have younger chickens that aren't laying yet, they won't eat any of it. So somehow they know what they need, how much they need, which is kind of neat.
That's really astonishing, isn't it? There's so much about animals that we don't quite understand. How do they know these
things?
We don't
give them credit for, I know. And I've always believed that if you provide them the things they need, the chickens have their own herb garden next to the coop to try to keep them from eating everything. And they'll go in and they'll just like nibble on the plants. And so we do have a lot of, you know, oregano and rosemary and sage and the things that do come back. But then, you know, I plant the basil and the dill and that from seed for them. And they just kind of wander around and nibble. And I figure they kind of know what they need and how much of each they need because herbs are super nutritious.
Mm-hmm. So do they favor one herb over another?
Excuse me, they tend to like the dill, the parsley. They don't like the woody stems, like the thyme and the rosemary. They don't tend to eat so much. They like sort of the softer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The oregano, marjoram, dill, parsley, cilantro, those kind of things.
And does that have an effect on the flavor of the eggs?
Not any one ingredient, but overall the diet of your chicken, if they're eating a variety of things, bugs and all that kind of stuff, the eggs, I think will taste better. They'll just have more flavor because it's a more varied diet than just a scoop of chicken feed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're back on chickens, so I can't resist getting into the questions.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
No, I think that's interesting.
Back to the garden.
Let me ask. So, okay, do you use them all for eggs, or do you hire any? Do you raise any for meat?
No, just the eggs.
Okay. And you alluded to, well, for one thing, you don't keep roosters in general, and you alluded to the fact that you have chicks. You buy chicks and not eggs to raise them?
I've done both. I've hatched eggs, but you do end up with a lot of roosters that way. You know, Statistically, half are going to be girls, half are going to be boys. And it's really hard to get rid of extra roosters. Mm-hmm. So it's just buying the baby chicks, because you can choose either male or female. It just makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. I want to know how you can tell the difference between a male and a female chick. Not that easy. I mean,
the professionals can, you know, the hatcheries have the professionals. And I was actually at a hatchery out in Ohio visiting them. And obviously they hatch out about half males and females, and they're selling the females, and the males, there's not as much demand for, but each hatch day they have a little store, and the local people, a lot of Amish will come in and they buy the chicks. You know, they're going to use them for meat, but at least, you know, they're out in a field or whatever, you know, having
the males
until the day that, yeah. So they'll just come in and buy a bunch of little male chicks for like 50 cents or a dollar a piece, which is great, 'cause they're raising, you know, meat for their family. Mm-hmm. And this way the hatchery, you know, gets rid of the males that aren't being sold.
What about capons?
You know, my father-in-law raised chickens, he and his brother, I guess, for, I don't know if it was 4-H, but some kind of project. And he remembers going out with his mom and doing that. I don't know if that's really a thing anymore. I know somebody told me once she wanted to keep her rooster and he was getting really aggressive. So she asked her vet if he could caponize him, because that should cut down on the aggression and all that. And the vet really had no idea how to do that. I think that might be a skill that has sort of fallen by the wayside.
They're doing it somewhere, because you can still buy capons at the grocery store, right? I'm thinking of it. And it's not like a cow. Or cow, you can't see this internal hair at the back of them, can you?
Exactly. And I guess that is what kind of makes it hard, is that it's all internal. So it's not something that is really visible. But yeah, the commercial chicken farms, I guess, have people that do it. I mean, I don't know that it's a career choice that too many people are going into, but
it wouldn't be a career choice for the chickens, for the milk.
Well, I don't know if there's a choice between dying as a little chick or living till you're what, two? I guess they don't keep capons that long. I guess
how old do chickens live?
How long do chickens live, Lisa?
10 or 12 years.
Really? How long do they lay?
3 years, 4 years.
And you just keep your old chickens around?
They will lay usually every spring. Even our older hens will pop out a few eggs, but really for good daily laying all through spring and summer, probably only 2 or 3 years, and then production starts to drop off.
Okay. So you have 18 chickens. Mm-hmm. How many of them are in their prime laying years?
We're getting maybe 5 or 6 eggs a day. Mm-hmm. So we have 17 hens because we have Sherman. And oh, right. I'd say probably, I don't know, at least a third of those chickens are 6+ years old.
Yeah.
So we probably, you know, 5 or 6 of them are well past, and then we get 5 or 6 eggs a day this time of year.
Mm-hmm. And in the spring, what do you think will happen?
Hopefully it'll get closer to 10, maybe, or 12. I think our youngest are maybe 3, though, because we didn't get chicks. I think the past 2 years, we didn't get any new chicks.
Right.
I usually try, like, at least every other year to add a few, just so we have sort of a rolling age range there in the flock.
So those are quite old chickens you've got. How do you keep the predators away?
We do a lot of staying in your pen time. Mm-hmm. You know, especially times like spring. Spring is rough because they're coming out of winter. Food sources, they're kind of scarce. They have babies to feed, which makes them really bold. And then, of course, the babies, once they start hunting, tend to be a little more bold because they don't know the rules. They don't know maybe that people are dangerous or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, everyone is kind of getting ready for winter. Mm-hmm. So that's another time that is really dangerous. There's a lot of migration going on with aerial predators. So I try to, different times of year, be a little more cautious. Summer, I tend to be a little freer with the free range time because mm-hmm. we're outside more too. You know, mm-hmm. so I might take a book and sit outside with them, or, you know, my husband's washing the car, or I'm gardening or whatever. So I try to let them out when I'm going to be outside with them and our dog is outside. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the winter, they don't want to walk on snow. So they just stay in their pen all winter.
Right. I read something some time ago about chickens and their feet freezing. But some of them have feathers in there on their feet, don't they?
They do. And I don't know. None of mine like to walk on snow. No. I don't like it at all. No, I put down straw and they'll walk on that. But yeah, I always try to make sure, and for our ducks and geese too, like if they are outside, I always try to make sure that there are places where I put down straw or a wooden pallet or something that they can get up off of the ground, you know, so they don't get frostbite or whatever on their feet mm-hmm. or their toes.
Okay.
I have a question about the cookbook.
Okay.
So are you cooking with things that you grow in the garden as well as the eggs?
Yes. I'd say it's not really farm to table because I didn't want to go in that direction. I wanted to keep it a true egg cookbook, but I am pairing the eggs with a lot of herbs, a lot of vegetables, you know, a lot of local like maple syrup or blueberries or things that, you know, are very kind of local to Maine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the cookbook when we come back from our break.
Every issue of Canada's Local Gardener magazine is a valuable resource that you'll want to hang on to for years to come. We'll help you explore the mysteries of the garden so that you can get more out of it. Subscribe to Canada's Local Gardener and get growing with us. Visit localgardener.net.
We were just talking about your Fresh Eggs Daily cookbook, Lisa. Tell us, it's all eggs. What's in it?
It is. When I first pitched the idea, my editor didn't really see like the vision of just an egg cookbook. He wanted it to be farm to table. And I feel like that's been so overdone, you know, mm-hmm. all the seasonal eating and this and that. And I really wanted to keep it. Eggs, people who follow me have chickens, they have tons mm-hmm. of eggs, and eggs are in almost everything. I mean, it came to the point where I had to cut down the number of recipes. It wasn't like I was trying to, you know, scramble and find more recipes that use eggs. So it is scramble. Very egg-centric. Scramble, yeah, pun intended. Lots of vegetables. It's not a vegetarian cookbook because I do love bacon. But if, you know, for someone who's trying to cut out red meat, the mm-hmm. egg is the protein in most of the recipes, you know, so, you know, whether you're doing like a whole 30 or, you know, something like that, it's lots of vegetables, lots of eggs. I do love cheese. Mm-hmm. I do love bacon. Mm-hmm. So
I'm thinking how many recipes are there in it?
Over 100. I actually have not counted the actual number because there are some sauces and sides and things like that, you know, uh-huh. But yeah, about 100. From savory to sweet, you know, desserts, breakfast. I didn't love the idea of dividing it into breakfast, lunch, and dinner because I see no problem with having, say, an omelet with some vegetables for dinner.
Yeah.
You know, like I love breakfast for dinner. And I think that even just like fried eggs and toast and bacon for dinner is fine too, yeah. you know. So I just wanted to kind of get people thinking about eating eggs all day, not just yeah. scrambled for breakfast. There's just so many ways to cook an egg.
Okay.
Do you guys know the story of how eggs became the breakfast of America?
No.
Because no.
Not the normal thing. We ate porridge or you know, cereal. And certainly they used to do that in England. But it was an advertising agency working for the egg lobby. And they started talking about the benefits and the nutritional benefits of eggs as a breakfast meal. And then they got doctors to sort of back them up and say, oh yeah, that's true. And that's changed the eating habits of a whole continent of people.
You know, that's interesting because somebody in another interview did ask me why eggs are considered a breakfast food. And I said, the only thing I can think of is because your chickens lay their eggs in the morning. So like you'd be on your farm, you'd get up, you'd go out, milk your cows, you know, collect your eggs, come in. It's morning. You've got some eggs in your hands. So you cook up your eggs, but you're right. I mean, even as kids, we had chickens and we ate oatmeal a lot, you know, or some kind of something for breakfast. That's really interesting though. I mean, eggs are a great breakfast because they really fill you up. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a great protein. They're so nutritious. So anytime they say, you know, you shouldn't eat eggs or eggs are bad for your cholesterol or whatever, but what are you going to eat instead? A donut? I mean, when you think of your options, eggs are still probably pretty nutritious other than maybe oatmeal.
When I think of the recipes you can get from eggs, I think of, okay, you know, there's the fried and boiled and all that. Quiche, omelets, frittata. Where do you go beyond? Shakshuka is one. Where do you go beyond that?
Yeah. And all those you mentioned are in there because I really wanted the book. I mean, I think that a lot of people don't cook anymore. And like when I was talking about the cookbook, I was actually surprised at how many people did not know why pound cake is called pound cake, you know, because the traditional recipe called for a pound of flour, but you know, and I started thinking about it and thought, how many people have a recipe for a Boston cream pie? You know, like just a lot of basics like that, that I feel like if you've got a lot of eggs, lemon meringue pie, lemon curd, you know, things like that. So a lot of like the real, like foundational egg recipes, egg benedict, things like that. But then I had fun with like toad in the hole or scotch eggs. You know, Americans aren't really familiar with that.
How do you make scotch eggs? Because I've heard of them. I've never had one.
I actually had a friend from the UK who came over. She made them like for the holidays, like kind of like a cottage industry, family, friends, and then word of mouth, whatever. So she taught me how to make them. And you basically soft boil an egg or hard boil, although I like the soft boil version better. And then we rolled it in pork sausage and you can like season it with things or whatever. And then you bread that, deep fry it. So you end up with this like this ball of like egg and sausage, deep fried, crispy. So good.
Okay.
Yeah. So I tried to throw in some, you know, different recipes that people might not think of. Just different ways.
Do you have a shakshuka recipe?
Sort of. I have in individual ramekins an egg. You know, with the sauce, I didn't do like in a skillet. And I kind of debated about that because it kind of seemed like it was trending. And I was like, well, cookbooks take a long time to come out. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want it to be something that was trending. And then by the time the book came out, it was like over and done because it's everywhere. You know, there was another recipe too like that, which it seemed like it was everywhere when I was starting the book and then it just disappeared.
Really?
So I was like, well, I'm glad I didn't go with trends. And I don't remember what that was. But I did try to stay fairly traditional because I think, like for me personally, having an egg cookbook with all those kind of basic, a creme brulee and pudding, you know, things that you do over and over again, I thought would be really helpful.
Okay. And of course, there are the other things that you grow on the farm going with the eggs. Could you include them all? Is there some kind of egg and beet recipe, for instance?
Oh my goodness. Yes. So, okay. So I love beets. I did a beet hash, which I'm not a huge lover of hash, but here in Maine, hash is like huge and they have a red flannel hash. And I thought, you know, I love beets. So I did a hash with beets and then put eggs on top of it. And you could also do like a sweet potato hash kind of thing. That's great in the winter because it's super hearty, super filling. So it was fun kind of playing around with a traditional recipe, but using different ingredients. Okay. I also did an egg and butternut squash. I don't know what page it's on. Anyway, butternut squash rings, and then put an egg in the middle and bake it. And that's another nice one too, where, you know, you're using some of the squash that you grew in the summer in the winter to make like a nice dinner option.
So when I was a kid, my dad used to cut a hole in a piece of bread and put it in there. Is that, you know, sort of common?
Yeah. What's not common is what people call it. that there are so many different names for, you know, like egg in the hole, or, I mean, everybody's got their own family name for what they call that.
Oh, I thought that was toad in a hole.
So toad in a hole really technically is sort of like baked in a pan, kind of like the egg puffs up and you put sausages in and they're supposed to look like little toads, like sticking their heads out of the dirt.
Okay.
I did a lot of research into like names and where they came from, but yes, a lot of people do call that toad in a hole. A lot of people. Mm-hmm.
In my family here in Winnipeg, the kids absolutely love French toast for breakfast. And that's a big Christmas treat. So
yeah,
that's another one. I mean, a lot of bread with the eggs, isn't there?
And bread pudding too is another great one. You know, it's good to have recipes like when your bread goes stale, you know, bread pudding, French toast, there's all kinds of things, even like a strata, which is basically a frittata with bread mm-hmm. in it. You know, you throw some chunks of stale bread in with your eggs and your vegetables and your herbs and cheese and throw it in the oven. You know, eggs are just like, they're such a great vehicle for so many different things.
Well, I'm really interested to know about beets and eggs. Like, I'm trying to remember, think how that would taste. That's unusual.
I really liked it. I mean, I thought it was interesting, but I love beets. So, I mean, if you are a big lover of beets, I thought it had more flavor than a typical hash that uses the white potato.
How long has it been since you've bought an egg?
Well, okay. I actually did just have to buy some because I've been doing a lot of Zoom demos, for local TV stations, mm-hmm. and our chickens aren't laying that many eggs, and I want to eat like those eggs. So I did actually go buy store-bought eggs for the demos, because usually I have to make two of everything, because I have to have one finished and then sort of like make one on air. And then by the time I've sort of fake made it and the other one's old, I usually end up just throwing it all away. So I was like, I'm not going to waste our good eggs. Yeah. So I did buy store-bought eggs for that. But as far as like buying eggs for us for eating, years and years and years and years and years. Yeah. I mean, if we run out of eggs in the winter, then we do just start eating oatmeal, you know, until the chickens start laying again.
Right.
How many children do you have, Lisa?
One, he's grown. He lives in Florida. He's not as much a fan of New England weather as you would think he should be.
Okay, so there's no little munchkins running around with the chickens. Are chickens compatible?
Are chickens and what?
Chickens and
children.
Are they compatible?
Oh. I mean, I've had friends come over and bring their kids, and like if they're chasing the chickens and whatever, the chickens can get sort of traumatized and not lay for a day or so. But it's really fun to bring little kids. You know, say to them, like, they look at the chickens, they get all excited, and then say to them, do you want to look for eggs?
Yeah.
And bring them in, and they get to look in all the little boxes. And I mean, the eggs usually get broken, you know, because the kid drops them or whatever. But like, they get so excited, especially if there's a chicken in one of the boxes, and you say, you know, put your hand underneath and see if there's an egg under there. Like, the kids just, they freak out.
Yeah. Does the chicken?
Not so much. My chickens are pretty used to
it. Stick your hand under a chicken and it just sits there, right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I have a chicken named Mean Kate, and Mean Kate will peck your hand.
Yeah.
She doesn't like anybody. But other than Mean Kate, pretty much the others are just kind of like, you know, what are you doing under there?
Okay. So I guess I would be amiss if I didn't ask something about chickens for cold weather. What do you do? Do you heat your coop in the winter or?
No, I mean, we do have a lot of chickens and ducks. The important thing is having the right size building for the number that you have. They do put out a lot of body heat. So I have a lot of straw on the ground, good ventilation, because you don't want like moisture and ammonia to build up. But usually my coop is about 20 degrees warmer than the outside temperature, just from the body heat, from whatever sunlight comes in during the day. I have curtains over the windows so I can close them at night to, you know, try to keep in some of that body heat. So no, I don't heat the coop. I mean, it's just such a huge fire hazard.
Yeah.
You know, and chickens, electricity.
And what about their water?
So I use the heated dog water bowls that you can plug in. Like, I run an extension cord. But with the ducks, they play in the water all day. So unless the temperatures get like close to zero, the water is not freezing solid. because they're just walking by and pushing around in it, you know. So if the temperature is around freezing or 20 degrees or whatever, the water usually doesn't freeze solid. But I do use the heated dog water bowls that work really, really well.
Okay. How cold does it get in Maine in the winter?
And again, I don't really know my Celsius conversions, but we can go for like a week or two with temperatures that don't go above freezing. So like in the 20s. Or the teens. And then at night, we can go down to zero, -4, -6. I think the coldest we've had is -18, which I had never been in cold that cold before. But the chickens were fine. It was fine. And, you know, this sounds so crazy, but it is a dry cold. I honestly was colder in Virginia when it was like 40 and damp. Like, I hate damp cold. If it's like a nice crisp 16 with the sun out and no wind, like I'll go out sometimes with like no jacket on, and all of a sudden I'll be halfway to the coop and be like, oh, I probably shouldn't put my coat on, you know, but I find it much more comfortable because it's a nice, dry, crisp cold.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you where it's a dry, crisp cold. In Winnipeg.
Very nice.
Well, but
it's snowy this year.
Yeah. It can be, I would say -20 Celsius in Winnipeg, is like about -5 in Toronto, which is, how does that, turn to Fahrenheit, Mom?
I think below zero, aren't they the same? Yeah. I don't even know.
They're the same at -40.
Yeah. Oh.
But probably minus.
I guess below zero is below zero though. So it's cold. I don't know.
Zero is the freezing point for Celsius.
Right. And that's another thing I didn't realize so many people know. A lot of people don't realize that, because I said once something about, you know, below freezing, the chickens are just fine, like down to about 18 or 20 degrees. But then below zero, they really start to get cold. And someone was like, what's the difference? And I was like, well, in Fahrenheit, 32 is freezing, zero is zero, you know? So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, 32 degrees, that's nothing here. I mean, that's like a nice warm winter day.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, for sure. Here too. We really don't heat the chicken coops here much either.
It's surprisingly
not worth it. And then the chickens
heat them. Like people in Georgia are asking me about heating their coop. You know, it's going to get down to 45 degrees. Should I be heating my coop? And I'm like, chickens love that temperature. Yeah. Like, you know, it's weird. It's like, because people who live in the South hate the cold and they get really cold really easily. So they think their chickens are cold. Whereas us, we're used to the cold, so we're just like chickens. You got to just suck it up because you're not heating your coop.
So they don't mind it, the chickens?
You know, I mean, they have feathers. Like all the little birds are outside and stuff, and they don't even have a coop to sleep in. I mean, it's amazing going from outside to like inside the coop. Like when I go to lock up, I'll step from outside into the coop. There's no wind. It's warmed up by the sun all day. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is really comfortable in here, guys. You know, it's like, yeah, no, they don't mind.
How do you prevent it from smelling?
Good ventilation. I do leave the windows open. We have vents like up, you know, on the roof. Honestly, when it's super cold in the winter, it doesn't smell because everything's frozen.
Yeah.
Like they poop and it probably just freezes immediately. So the smell is more of a problem in the summer, but they're outside more in the summer, you know, and so I change out the straw often. I try to keep them outside as much as possible because if they're hanging out inside their coop, then it's just going to get all gross and smelly.
So yeah,
when you said you use the chicken, you know, waste in the garden, do you have to let it rot first? You have to store it somewhere?
It just because it's really high in nitrogen, so you'll burn your plants, you know, so you do have to let it age. So I will rake out the straw and the feathers and the poop and everything into the compost pile, let that decompose. I do plant garlic in the fall, and I will, when I clean out the coop at the end of the summer, I'll just put all that straw right over my garlic. Mm-hmm. I mulch my rhubarb in the fall because rhubarb is a super heavy feeder, really loves all those nutrients. And we're not going to be eating any of that, you know, for like a good 8 months. So that I do directly mulch. And then, you know, in the spring, I'll use the composted manure in the garden. But yeah, you definitely, I mean, 6 months is a good.
That's not very long though, is it? That's good for you.
It's not all chicken manure because it's got the straw and the feathers in it too. you know, so it's not like concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. That's a lot about chickens.
That's a lot about chicken poop.
We didn't even get to ask about ducks, which I, okay, well, I'll stop there. We won't start to talk about ducks and geese and all those other furry feathered animals, because this is just about the end of our chat today. I want to thank you, Lisa, for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
I want to thank my mom. And I'd like to thank the Government of Canada for the funds to make this possible. And I'll see you next week.